you do 8 megabyte per second?
Yep.
So there's a setting where we can go higher, you know, right?
Yeehaw! It's beginning to feel a lot like Christmas.
What's the next words? Do you know the next words?
Everywhere we go.
Everywhere we go. I would have finished that on my Instagram earlier today, but I couldn't remember the last words. So then I just ended. My Instagram post. I was like, "Yeah, I'm done. I don't know."
Suspense is fine. That's a good idea.
You got coated with snow. That was bad.
Well, that was like a block from here. Like I walked a block.
I walked to a meeting, and it was like embarrassing. I'm just soaking wet. Pants are wet. Hair is just soaked. I'm like, oh, I look stupid.
I actually, the meeting that I went to, the person gave me a towel. They're like, you need to wipe down.
That's so nice.
You are covered with snow. Offices, a China Hall on a Wednesday. Whew. We made it.
Good day.
We made it.
After a few reschedules, we made it.
Yes, after a few. No apologies needed. Today we are joined by this guy right here. What's your name?
I'm Josh Langmade. I own Media Core in town. We do video production and social media marketing.
And coming out of, left field, who do we got over there in the yellow sweater?
We got Johnny Tran.
Johnny Tran.
Johnny.
Johnny's coming from what, John Marshall?
Yep, John Marshall High School, about to graduate this spring.
Varsity tennis player?
Yep. Yeah.
It's got to be
a cow on his hat, too, though.
It's got to be tough playing tennis in the snow.
Oh, yeah.
I'm Bucky. I'm one of the co-founders of Offices of China Hall. And our special guest tonight, who do we got?
My name's Zach Zern. I own that recording studio called Carpet Booth Studios. Thanks for having me.
Yes, yes. Thank you for joining. I'm excited to share with the interwebs your story, because I don't know that very many people know about your story. I've been fortunate to be in tune for a little bit now, and it's been fun to watch. So let's just jump into it. Zach,
let's jump into it.
Are you from Rochester?
I moved here in late middle school from the South, and went to Kellogg and Century. And then moved back 2.5 years ago after being away for college, so I'm from here for the most part. I consider myself from Rochester.
How was the high school days?
They were fine. Century was a cool school. Yeah. I was just talking with Johnny about PSEO before we went on mic. Probably should have done that, but Century was cool. I liked it. You like Century?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What year did you graduate?
2010.
Okay.
08?
Yeah.
With my wife, yeah.
Got it. 2010. Cool.
Yeah.
No, and did you have siblings that went to Century too, or?
I'm an only child.
You are?
Huh. Yeah. I wish I wasn't. Every year I would ask my parents for like a present. It wouldn't be a brother or sister. But I got a sister-in-law and a brother-in-law, which is great. So
nice.
Fills the void.
So were you like the kid walking down the hallways with your headphones on, just like rapping to Eminem when he was big?
Definitely not rapping. I do have some rap music out there with my friends that we did.
Yeah,
I'm not going to give any URLs out because that's incriminating in many ways.
If we Google long enough, will we find it?
You probably will.
Yeah,
I'm going to go home tonight and do some backtracking.
No, you can't.
And eliminate it.
You can't.
It's a dark part of my history. Yeah. No, I feel like I was a pretty social kid. I kind of had my hands in many different cliques and scenes, so I don't think I was walking around with headphones on. Did we do that when we were there? I can't remember, honestly, if headphone, like, was...
There wasn't the Apple.
Did headphones exist in 2010? Yeah, I can't remember, yeah.
Oh,
yeah. No, but I mean, was that a thing that kids would do at school?
I feel like you had them around your neck, yeah.
Okay.
I don't...
It was a fashion statement.
For looks, yeah.
I've never been able to pull that off.
As Mrs. McDonald would say, hey, stop listening to that music.
Is that what she says?
No.
Oh. Johnny, are kids wearing earbuds now in high school?
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so let me tell you. You know AirPods, right? Mm. And that's everyone wants AirPods now. Oh. And they'll just put on some AirPods and do this with their hood.
Really?
Yeah. Don't even know.
Beats are out.
And, like, are they sitting in class that way? They're sitting in class that way.
Yeah.
Really?
You can't even tell. Like, yeah, you can't tell I have AirPods on.
Wow. And then teacher comes walking by and just pull down the hoodie and be like, hey,
But they can't, like, take your AirPods. Well, they can. But
yeah, you could.
I think that whole thing's... Teachers are getting cooler or chiller.
Oh, really?
About that.
And the reason is because they want them to be more into music like Zach has become.
Oh, maybe. That'd be a really pure reason. I'm a little skeptical, but maybe. Yeah.
So in high school, would you call yourself a musician?
Yeah, that was my identity for sure.
I played in
garage bands and pop punk bands and started to do recording. I mean, the whole namesake of our studio started in middle school, high school with me, you know, recording at home in a carpet booth made out of my mom's closet. So yeah, that's always been my identity. I played soccer too at Century, so that was another big part of my life, but definitely one of the music kids with skinny jeans.
Nice. Punk rock?
Yeah.
Sum 41, you ever listen to them?
Oh yeah.
I like Sum 41. Fat Lip, I think, was the one song.
That's the hit. Yeah.
That was the hit. And then after that, they didn't like have any other big hits.
No, I mean, within like the pop punk genre, they stayed relevant for a long time, but as far as mainstream goes, that was kind of their...
That was their mainstream one?
I think so, yeah. Huh.
Uh-huh. Thank you for everybody that's joined so far. It looks like we got some people tuning in on on the Facebook. As you went through high school, did you take any classes that helped with music at all?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was super involved in the latter half of high school in choir. And I had some great conductors that taught me how to control my voice in a better manner as far as my performance goes. Two of my interns at the studio right now go to Century and they both take music theory courses, but that wasn't offered when I was in school. So I waited until college to take proper music theory courses. But man, I would have killed to have a theory course in high school because I'm so nerdy about that stuff. And if I could have prepared myself better for collegiate level theory courses by having a high school level course on that, I probably would have saved time and money and stress. But yeah, I think honestly a lot of my musical knowledge and experience in high school did come from choir and then just playing in a bunch of bands and learning stuff the hard way.
Music and theory, I don't even know what they would
music
teach.
Music theory is hard.
Is it?
It's super hard.
It's like the mathematics of music, basically.
Well, I was in choir and then I'm still in a choir that's outside of my school, the Southeastern Minnesota's Honors Choir. And a lot of the, like, you have to know a lot about music. And, like, I don't even know a lot of music theory. But they gave me a test, and I didn't know a thing on it. But I had it in, so I got in. I failed the test really bad. I knew it, guys.
It's corrupt. We have it on mic now. Yeah, yeah.
It's been leaked.
My mom's a really good musician, and she hooked me up.
Yeah. No, it was... my voice and my reading, I knew how to read music, and so it was just enough to get me in, you know.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
They gave me some videos. I had to retake the test, and I kind of touched up on it and got like the bare minimum to get in.
Okay.
Yeah.
So from high school, what was the next kind of transition after high school? Was it like music is going to be my thing, or was music like maybe a second thought and I'm going to go and... like have a real job,
yeah,
as some would say.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, that's a huge conversation amongst creatives in general, I think, because if you get to do the dream job, it always feels like you're one in a million as far as being able to do that, because it's so hard to, whether it's video or music or acting or whatever it may be, you know, it's really hard to make it. I didn't really have any other legitimate options. When I was like a kid, I thought I wanted to be a lawyer, so I was like in debate team for a year at school. And supposedly I wanted to be a car salesman when I was like really young, which I'm so glad I dropped that dream. I don't know why I wanted to do that. No offense to car salesmen, but I'm
we
really
just
happy
had Julio
with what I
up here. Julio yeah, was his car salesman.
Some people are great at it. Yeah. I just would not be good at it. but yeah, I mean, there was really no other option. I mean, as far as like from about fifth grade was the first time that I sort of found out about recording. I was living in Texas and went to like a magnet school, it's called, which it's still in the public school system, but a lot of the magnet schools would have emphases as far as a subject goes. So there's like a science heavy magnet school, math, and then I went to the fine arts magnet school. I had to like try out to get in or whatever. But we had like four musicals a year, and we had all these bunch of like extracurricular things that we could sign up for as elementary school kids to learn more about just arts in general, which was the coolest thing. And some kid probably my age now in his upper 20s came with like a little four track cassette tape recorder in like fifth grade and showed us how to record a few little things and you move a little faders and you could mix audio basically in real time. And I think from that moment I was like, this is addicting and this is what I need to do because it makes me joyful. And I feel at home doing it. So songwriting and recording and production and helping people make records was like always the dream. And so yeah, everything extracurricular wise and education wise led to here. So I went to Winona State and studied music with emphasis in composition theory and voice.
Do you write your own music?
I do.
When did that start?
I think probably the first like recording I have of anything is probably like 6th or 7th grade.
All right.
Writing love songs on my guitar. Yeah.
Heartbroken. He's just
Was it heartbroken? Oh, yeah. Really?
I mean, oh yeah, for sure. I mean, just talking about yes. girls. I mean, that's where so many people start. You know.
Yeah.
Writing love songs. I'm lucky though because it scored my wife, which was super nice. I wrote her a song, and that's how she kind of got interested in me. And here we are. So I don't really write cheesy love songs anymore, but I'm glad they existed for a while.
You're like, I'm now in love. We're good. We can write about other stuff.
Exactly. No more struggle or pain, right? No, there's still plenty of struggle.
So Winona, was that a newer program offered, or had it been offered in the past? Like, what's
the cool thing about Winona State is that it's such a small music program, and with your senior capstone project especially, if you sort of plan ahead to that, you can sort of select your own emphases and focus on what you want by taking elective courses and finding mentors in the program. So I had a mentor and my capstone director, an amazing like avant-garde composer. The cool thing about Winona State, honestly, it's not well known for like a reputable music program. To be honest, I went because it was cheap and accessible, and I thought I needed a degree, and I wanted to round myself out as far as what I was able to do, which it, the program did exactly that. But this composer, the thing I was saying is the cool thing about Winona State music staff is almost all of them are like still working and gigging musicians, and a lot of it's in a classical format. But for example, my music history professor, he would teach courses and then he would miss Friday because he was flying to Berlin to play with the Berlin Philharmonic as a cellist, and then the next weekend he would play in a rock band with the Sun in Duluth, and they would do little weekend tours and stuff, and then he'd come back and teach. And so my capstone director was an avant-garde composer. He wrote like super trippy classical leaning music that was really experimental, and so he sort of took me under his wing, and we studied a lot of composition, and then how does theory fit into composition, and then my instrument of choice was voice, so I studied opera. So that's kind of how the emphases got to be selected.
In college, was it a clear path as to what was next after college, or was it, what was the steps after, like what were you thinking while you're in college?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I was thinking that I learned probably about like halfway through college was if I did want to work in music as a career, I was going to have to make it for myself. And that's the thing about a lot of classical leaning music programs is they don't teach a lot about entrepreneurship. But there's some like Berklee College of Music in Boston, McNally Smith before it closed down in St. Paul, more modern leading conservatories of music. They do a much better job and a decent job at teaching musicians how to be entrepreneurs, because in this day and age, unless you start your own thing or you are really self-motivated and a hard worker, there's not really studios just outright hiring engineers anymore. There's not record labels hiring as many A&R reps like they used to. And so I knew that halfway through college I was going to have to make something for myself if I wanted to do it. And so I guess that's where we are now.
What year did you graduate college?
2014.
Were you taking gigs through college?
I wasn't actually playing live a lot through college. I had left a band that I'm now in again called Author, and I had been part of the starting group of that and then left to go to school. And so I was just super focused on education, and then I played a lot at the church I was going to. That sort of gave me that nice live fix, which was nice. And I was able to actually make a record there with that church. So that sort of gave me the fix. And then, I mean, being in college, you're in a bunch of different ensembles, and so we perform a lot. I mean, it was all classical leaning, right? So didn't quite get that modern music fix that I love, but it kept me busy, that's for sure.
It's neat.
What kind of traveling have you done being a musician?
I think the probably first big trip I did being a musician, and this is a little bit illegitimate because I was in high school and it was just the choir. But when I was at Century, the choir program was like a really reputable regional program, and we got to go to London, England on a concert. And that's actually where I met my now wife, which is super cool, on that trip. But we got to go to London and like sing in all these crazy cool cathedrals and sightsee for like 10 days or whatever. That was really cool to be able to.
She lived in London?
No, she's from Rochester.
Okay.
She went to Century as well. She's just a couple grades older than me.
Okay.
But I had joined the choir just a few weeks before we went on this trip, and I happened to just sit across from her the first night at dinner, and so that's where we met and started to talk on that trip. That was 2008.
I was going to say, if she lived in London, that would be nuts. Yeah. You go there, you just
it's
see
not
her,
that fairy tale of a story. That's what a lot of people think right away when I say that, so I probably should figure out a better way to phrase that to not let people down. And then, yeah, I did some small small runs and tours with a band I used to play in before college, and then did a little playing around in college with like the worship band and worship team I was leading. And then since then, when I've rejoined this band, Author, I've gone on 3 tours with them. The farthest we've usually go is like I think we played in Albuquerque last year, and we just got done. I think I've been home for 3 weeks now on a 2.5-week tour. We went to played Dallas and Nashville and Chattanooga, Omaha. We did like a little Midwestern tour for 2.5 weeks, which was super fun. And I can't say anything now, but we've got some cool stuff planned for the rest of this year that'll take us a little bit further out, which cool.
We'll get into the story at Carpet Booth, but we do have a good question. For those that maybe don't know what Carpet Booth is, you could do a short summary because I got a question to follow up with it.
Okay.
What is Carpet Booth Studios?
Carpet Booth Studios is a recording and production studio here in town. And so we basically help people with their creative vision and the technical side of any sort of musical and audio projects. So a little bit about what we do is corporate work, like voiceover, podcasting, audiobooks, that kind of stuff. But 9 out of the 10 projects we work with are either solo musicians or bands or ensembles helping them make records.
And what would be, this is the question, what is your vision for Carpet Booth? It's one of the people who have asked.
That's deep.
Who asked that? Sourab Bahata.
Oh, Sourab. He's one of my best friends from college.
Sourab, what's up, Sourab? Thanks for joining.
Love
best
you, man.
From college.
You're the best.
What's yes.
What's my vision for Carpet Booth? To provide the region, specifically the region, that's kind of our target right now. I mean, if we grow outside of that, that's a cool byproduct, but really just to provide the region with a high quality, affordable, comfortable, and professional recording studio where people can get their art out in the world, and I can help them do that. That's really the vision.
So you're getting through college and you get done with college in 2014.
Yep.
What was the next step in your career, in your life? Like what were you flipping burgers at McDonald's or?
No, so the church I was a big part of in college, I actually ended up working there for 2 years. And
nice.
So we lived in Winona until 2016. And so I was like an associate worship leader there. And that's when I did that album project with some like students that had committed to, which Sora was one of those guys, had committed to like kind of a mini internship. They were students that wanted to dive into worship leading and musicianship much more. And so I had 8 students under me that we led worship around the area and locally, and then did this record process together. And then I would help out with other design and video, just media in general at the church for a couple of years. Yeah. And it was an awesome position. The goal was always to, whether it was going to be a part-time thing or a full-time thing, to help people make records. And so I was able to do that a little bit in that position, which was awesome.
All right. And then through that, are you still being a musician and performing and like figuring out what you're going to do in life? Besides performing? Or was there ever a pause? Like, did you ever take the pause and like, okay, I can't.
Like, I need to
I can't
find
do
something
both.
More stable?
Yeah, exactly.
No. I just, like I said earlier, I never really thought I had anything else to offer the world other than music. And not in a cocky way, I just feel like it's a gift of mine and I don't think I have enough skills that would equate to a legitimate career. I have some skills in other media things, and I love playing and coaching soccer, but I'm not pro level. I can't play for money and the other stuff. There's people that are way better than me. And it's, honestly, it comes down to passion at the end of the day. Like, this is what drives me, and I'm just lucky that I can do it as my job. Yeah.
So Dora Von Wald asks,
okay,
when are you going to create some more Zach Zerd music?
Oh, she's always asking this.
We're waiting. I mean, like, come on. The studio's going to be open. The studio is going to be open when?
In 2 weeks. 2 to 3 weeks. Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, is the answer then 2 to 3 weeks? You'll have some more Zach Zerd music.
We're booked up through April, May, and into June as far as
even at midnight? Go. What are you doing at midnight?
I got to sleep at some point.
Dora, we don't have a good answer for you, Dora.
Dora, we have this conversation every time you see me. It'll come. I mean, I do have a bunch of songs waiting. I released a single like almost 2 years ago now. There's way more songs. I just need to figure out a way to prioritize it and find time, which is the excuse that everybody and their mom uses for everything. And I really believe in the songs I have written. I need to find time, hopefully this summer.
So Carpet Booth Studios, you're doing the church thing. 2 years goes by. What's next?
So we moved back to Rochester for my wife's job. She got a job at Mission 21 here, helping girls rescued from sex trafficking positions. And that was sort of her dream job. It's so funny. We said we'd never move back to Rochester. Not that we ever hated it or anything. We just wanted to experience something else. Mm-hmm. But of all places, her dream position sort of opened up here. And so that brought us back. And we were excited about it. And it's been so fun as an adult to experience Rochester versus just a high school kid. Because when you're in high school, you just drive around like a 3 mile radius, unless you're in PSEO or something like that, right? You're just going to your friend's house, soccer practice, garage band, and then back home or whatever, you know? So I didn't even say school on that list. You should probably
go to school. Maybe went to school.
Yeah, yeah.
If you felt like it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's been my Air Buds the whole way.
Yeah, but it's been really cool being back. So, yeah, that's kind of what brought us back. And then I started doing some projects for people just portably before we even had our first space. And so I would meet artists in their basements, or I'd rent out random spots, or I'd rent studios in the cities and work out of there.
What's some of the most random spots you rented?
Just a bunch of like garages and warehouses, that kind of stuff. I was lucky I didn't have to do a ton of that. It was mainly just renting out actual proper studios and then working with people in their homes. But there were a few times where I worked out of some random spots.
How were they finding you?
Just through personal connections, really. Yeah, because I didn't have a studio. I did have a website. I think I've had a website for like Zach Zerd producer, singer, songwriter since like 2014. So that did bring in some traffic, and that did bring in some of my first records that I did post college, which was nice. You know, past stuff I had worked on that sometimes can, if somebody likes that sound, they figure out where it's from and then they can work with that same person. So that kind of got me some of my first stuff. But yeah.
And so you're doing the mobile setup.
Yeah.
And then finally, was your wife like, you need to get a legitimate setup, or like enough of the house, or
no? It was I didn't actually do a lot there, which was nice. Or I didn't do anything super loud or crazy there. I did drums and other places things elsewhere. No, it really came down to I had like two Rochester area artists at the same time sign contracts to do records, and then I needed a temporary spot. And that's when I got in hold with an amazing commercial real estate guy in town called Bucky Beeman. And that sounded really sarcastic, but you are really good at your
Thank
job.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You helped me a lot, which was awesome.
Thank you.
And Bucky got us hooked up with our first ever spot, which was downtown in the old Decent's Cleaner Center on Broadway and 2nd Street North. And we were working out of just a few small rooms there. And it was a great first place for us to start. I'm thankful for it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And one thing I don't know that people recognize, but you shared this with me, is a Google address matters.
Yeah.
And like, why did it, you know, tell me about, you know, you registered your address.
Yeah.
And then from there, it was like, now you could be found like on Google in some way.
Yeah. They make, if you want to be found on Google results as a legitimate location or a business, it's so crucial that you have a proper address, because they send you a card in the mail with a verification code, and if you can't receive that, then you are a sojourner of a business, basically. You're a nomad, you don't have a home, basically. So that was very important. And I mean, it also just brings legitimacy if you can have on your website that you have a if you have a website, if you have an actual physical address. It helps people know that this thing is legitimate, especially within my industry. Is and this is not a bad thing, because this is where my roots are, is if you, a lot of people do like home studio stuff, and then they make these super legitimate websites, and they kind of
front maybe,
build themselves up a bit more than what they actually have to offer. I'm not thinking of anybody in specific or anything, just an industry thing as a whole. And then the artist may arrive to that space for their session and be a little bit like disappointed.
Wait, what? Yeah.
And honestly, that did happen a few times in our first space, where it was a great spot to get started, but it wasn't a perfect space.
Yeah, let's talk about that space. Okay. Well, first, before we talk about that space, we got Kevin Ewing who joined, and he said, "Hooray for Carpet Booth, state-of-the-art facility coming soon." So we're going to get on to that.
Kevin.
And Kevin has been a huge help.
He's been a massive help. He's been doing so much Finnish carpentry for us. The Finnish Touch, one of the best Finnish carpenters in the area. Anyways,
so
that's my plug.
So we'll get on to the new location, but and then we also have Brian Dunbar. Question, just a shout out to Zach that he's filling a major gap in Rochester. Cannot wait to see the new studio. Keep up the great work.
That dude's the best.
That's awesome.
He's really the only other person that has a legitimate studio spot, or not legitimate as far as a commercial professional studio spot in town. And it's been so great because we don't have a surplus of studios in town, and so it's been so great to be able to have a non-competitive partnership with somebody like Brian, because he does great work out of his studio and we're able to send each other work. And anyways, that guy's great. Thanks.
All right. So let's describe your first semi-legitimate location.
Okay, yeah.
What was that like?
So it was in the back of the Deason's Plaza. You could only enter from like the south side of the building. And again, when we first moved in, it was only supposed to be for like 3 months or something.
Because you were remodeling your basement to make
it
the studio.
That was my
the
plan.
Basement was going to be the studio.
That was my plan. To be honest, I never thought that Rochester would be able to support like a studio build like we're currently doing.
And so what year was that?
This was 2016.
That's crazy.
Mid or late 2016. Yeah, time flies. It's crazy. It feels like I just walked into that space. Super thankful. You could only enter from the south side on like an inconspicuous door. So I had like another sign in the front of the building that was like, go around the side if you want to get in, basically. And our pictures online, we were probably subject to that thing I was saying a few minutes ago about building yourselves up too much, because none of our images showed like the outside of the building. And so you walked through offices or a hallway that you'd see like Deason's Cleaner's office and Fast Sign's office, and then you finally get to our door or whatever, and then you enter into green walls everywhere.
And you on a big computer screen with a huge board.
Yeah, that's right, because you open the door and you're like,
there's
12
Zach.
Inches from me sitting at my desk.
Zach just kind of turns it on. Hello.
Yeah. 60-inch TV. It's like blinding probably walking in. But honestly, that was like the coolest little setup for us for that. We served a cool purpose, I think, being in that space. And we even had a window in between the control room and tracking room, which was super handy, especially like it was super turnkey for us, which was nice. And the purpose of that was always to be temporary. So we were going to record or make a home studio. But as we started to work in that space, the first few weeks, I didn't have a name or anything. It was just Zach's random spot downtown, because I only got it to work with.
Did you own the URL?
Zach's random spot downtown. Random. So we only worked with those couple people. That was our plan, and then we were going to build the home studio out, and then kind of word of mouth spread that there was a spot, and the market validated itself, and we got really busy really fast, as you saw happen, Bucky. And had people in there all hours of the day. And that's sort of what led us to think, wow, maybe Rochester is a place where my wife and I could settle down and I could actually do this as a somewhat, at least part-time endeavor in this area. I just thought we were going to have to go to Minneapolis eventually. But it's been really cool to see that Rochester, Owatonna, Winona, La Crosse, Mason City, this whole like tri-state corner has been really desperate for a space like we're creating right now. Not that there aren't other spots around. I don't have like an elitist view of what we do. I welcome the competition because it bolsters an arts community.
Creates community.
Area,
it's like the breweries. Look at how many breweries we have nowadays.
It's so
amazing.
Cool to even see like, especially Little Thistle and Thesis, like they promote each other more than I've ever seen two competitors promote each other, which is so cool. And even you bringing on other commercial real estate people to have conversations with them, it really can't hurt if you do it the right way.
Right.
So, I forgot where I was going with that.
So you're in Zach's random spot downtown, yeah, and people start showing up, which is nice.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, okay, we can make a legitimate business case out of this.
Yeah.
And was there a serious conversation then with your wife of like, are we going to do this? Or what was the...
There was a lot of serious conversation.
What are we going to do, right?
Yeah. I mean, the cool thing that I was able to do in that first space was the overhead was so low that I could sort of have a test period for a long time and just say like, yeah, if we only get like 6 months of success out of this, then like, that's what I always assumed is that Rochester would not be able to support and this would be a temporary thing basically. But we experienced the opposite of that, which was great. So yeah, many conversations, like as it got a bit, as we got more busy, as we started working with like higher caliber and higher quality artists, like those conversations between my wife and I were like, wow, this is working and we're happy and Rochester's getting way cooler and better to live in. So it became more of a reality.
Now we'll jump into it.
Okay.
What the heck is the big project now? Where is it?
Okay.
What is it?
Yeah.
How the heck is it coming to be?
Yeah. So if anybody saw Bucky and Josh's video, they were there probably a month and a half ago.
It's out on Instagram something. And YouTube. So I believe if you Google Carpet Booth Studios, it might pop up. Otherwise, go to my Instagram. You can see a quick tour.
Yeah, I think if you search it on YouTube, Carpet Booth Studios on YouTube is one of the top top results as well. So basically, to make a really long story short, we ended up kind of growing out of that first space. We had some limitations in that spot as far as amount of space and quality of space and what we wanted to do and who we wanted to work with. And so we started doing some scouting, and I looked at a bunch of different places around town and found this old church just a little south of Rochester in Marion. We're technically still within the Rochester city limits. It's down by the I-90 and 52 intersection.
People don't know that, do they?
No, they don't.
It's Rochester.
It's still Rochester. Yeah. When you look at the map, it looks super far away, but you're just on the highway for 10 to 15 minutes. It's easy.
They just draw the line around that.
We're at Carpet Booth, and we'll turn it back around.
But it's funny because actually like 2 to 3 blocks south of us, it becomes no longer a Rochester address. So we are right on the cusp, which is nice. I mean, I did look at like an old church in Eota as well. It was actually a similar distance, but there was things wrong with the building for sure that wouldn't have fit us. But I really wanted a Rochester address. There's something cool happening here, and I wanted to be associated with that in as many ways as we could be associated with it. So yeah, we started looking for spaces, and I found this really old, really cool older church. I mean, old, it was built in the early 80s, so it's actually in nice condition, but it's got a nice lofted ceiling in the former sanctuary space. There's a stage built in that was really cool, and it's like 6,400 square feet. I mean, this thing is mad big. It's got upstairs and a downstairs. And so, to make a way long story short, I saw the church, walked through it, was like, yeah, this could be a cool dream spot, not really doable. Went back for a second tour to tease myself, and then eventually told the real estate agent that, like, yeah, this is not something that I can really swing. To make another long story short, we had a financer approach us and express his interest to be involved. And he was associated with that congregation, with that church. And so we got a heck of a deal on the acquisition of the building and decided to go ahead with it and turn this thing into a Studio A and a Studio B. So the Studio B space is downstairs, and it's a mid-sized control room with a mid-sized tracking room. And we actually worked out of there for about 8 to 9 months in between the first green wall space we were talking about and in between our renovation right now. We needed to be out of the first space, and we knew that we were going to renovate in the winter. And so we actually struck up a deal with the church. It was quirky, but we struck up a deal that I get it Monday through Saturday and they get it on Sunday, basically. And so we tracked downstairs 6 days a week, and then they would have church on Sunday morning while their new church was being finished. And so they since moved out in December, and right around then we shut down running sessions since saws are loud and dust and microphones isn't good. And so we've been focusing on this renovation for 3 to 4 months now, which is crazy. Time flies. So downstairs will remain as a Studio B, which will be an edit suite and a comp suite, which I know some of these words are, I'm not trying to be exclusive, but some of these words are a little confusing, but it'll basically be targeted towards people that need a mixing spot, targeted towards people that are beginner and local musicians that need a much smaller, simpler, affordable setup to do simple recording. And then we got a lounge downstairs as well and a full kitchen. And then upstairs is where we're building like the full service Vintage Gear Studio A, which is a higher rate, but a massive live room, a huge control room, three isolation booths. And so we're able to do configurations as simple as solo vocalists to, you know, 15 piece bands if we want, or small choirs and small orchestras and ensembles. You guys grin and make me grin too.
Boom. Yeah,
yeah. Just talking about it. Like, boom. I'm so excited to just go see it again. Went in, it was just a big room and like a platform. And I'm like,
yeah, yeah.
You know?
All right, we'll take
a look at the plans. It's like, amazing. Oh, man. Now talking about it, I just want to go see it.
We'll take a break. William Weigel says, what would be your dream project artist to work with?
Wow. Maybe I should say this by saying there's like mentioning the records in the past few years that have really affected me. Daniel Caesar released a record in 2017 called Freudian, and it's like a soul R&B, which I love.
So good.
Yeah, you know the record. Yeah. It's next level.
Yeah. Are you into that?
Yeah, I love Daniel Caesar.
Oh, that record. I mean, all his stuff is really cool. He just did like a really cool song with the Free Nationals this year, which is Anderson .Paak's backing band. But that guy's incredible, and he's on the rise, which is really cool. So like soul and R&B I really love, Kacey Musgraves' record from this last year, she won like a bunch of Grammys for it. It's like a pop country album.
I was gonna say, I hear her in the country scene.
Yeah So she kind of is like a kind of like Taylor Swift, how she started off. She kind of like crosses genres a lot, which is really nice. But that record specifically, the songwriting is just like some of the strongest I've seen. The production on it is top notch. And so actually I'm excited. There's an artist I'm working with in the next month that is super inspired by that artist as well. And she seems to have a lot of chops and a lot of skill. And so that'll be a really cool project to work on. Again, she's not really well known yet in this region, but based on the talent I saw and based on the songs I'm hearing, I think we could do something really special.
Yeah,
with her.
And based on the studio I'm hearing about, I think you can be making some good songs.
I think so.
We're no longer in random Zach's random downtown space.
I know. still got the URL though. Yeah.
That's sweet. That answers the question right there.
Pop and soul. I like love that stuff. But last year we worked on two punk records. We worked on country singles. We worked on corporate stuff. We worked on a bunch of hip hop and R&B. So. I like the diversity. I don't want to really get pinholed into one genre.
All right, let's go around. What are you listening to? What are you listening to right now? What are you listening to? What you got?
I'm all over the place. I'll be in the back. Bucky will come in. I'll have Christian worship stuff planned. Like, all right. Next thing, we're both listening to country, and then it's hip-hop, and yeah. I'm all over the place.
What artist sticks out in your mind?
Not a ton. I mean, I go on Spotify and I just hit the category and just let her rip.
It's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy you can do that.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. I had two older brothers growing up, and they listened to a lot of hip-hop, and so that got me into hip-hop. And so I'm listening to, like, Outkast and 50 Cent, Lil Wayne, and then now I got into choir in middle school and in high school, and so I do appreciate choral pieces, more classical music, and then pop, you know, country. I listen to Billy Ray Cyrus. Did you hear that new song that came out with the Old Town Road?
There's a lot of controversy around it, man.
I know, that's crazy. I like it though.
It's a banger, that's for sure. But yeah, there's a ton of controversy around it. It's like a massive conversation on racism and country as a genre and what's accepted. It's an interesting conversation.
I mean, he did it on purpose, right? I mean, he knew that there was going to be some controversy to it, I would imagine. Or did he not know?
No, he had to.
Yeah,
I mean, he at least knew he was going to like shake the bush a bit.
Right. I haven't heard it yet, so now I'm curious.
Ending racism.
That's not realistic, but I mean it's starting conversation, genre, to be honest. This is a big blanket statement, but that needs to have the conversation. You know, it's less accepting than other communities and genres, and so to have a black person, you know, like breaking into that with like hip hop influence, but the same lyrics as any other run-of-the-mill country song is forcing people to have conversations about it, which is really cool.
Zach, what are you listening to?
Dude, I am kind of a broken record when it comes to records sometimes. Like, I've still been listening to that Freudian record and that Casey Musgraves record at least once a week. But I've probably in the last 2 to 3 weeks, I've been taking like a big trip back. People will probably bash me for this, but when that whole Michael Jackson documentary thing was coming out, I haven't even watched that documentary, so I have no opinions on it.
Yeah.
But, well, a bunch of snow just fell. It did remind me of, wow, I haven't listened to that guy's music in forever. So I like just listened to his entire discography a couple weeks ago. It's incredible. And I've been listening to Elton John a lot this week. Mm. And then I always like make my way back to like Beach Boys, Beatles, Bee Gees. Those are like my three staples as far as classic music. So I've listened to a lot of old music in the last few weeks. I've just been working at the studio alone a lot of the time. And I just need something a bit nostalgic to keep me going. And I listen to a lot of podcasts, to be honest.
I can't listen to podcasts and work. Because then in my brain, my brain's like,
yeah. I'm trying to pay attention.
Right, I'm trying to get my work done, and I want to listen to you.
I could do that, but if I'm just like nailing things, laying carpet, then I can.
But then I have a different. I can sometimes lift in weights, but then I at the same time doesn't get me pumped up. And then I'm like,
that's true.
This sucks. Like, gosh, I hate this.
That's true. Yeah.
I'm listening to. So when I'm working out, I'm listening to Rapzilla, and it's a Christian hip hop.
Okay.
Radio show. It's on SoundCloud, and they have it on other places, but I listen to it on SoundCloud. And then in the office, it'll be Luke Combs. I love listening to Luke Combs.
Yeah.
And then classic rock. I can put a playlist on a classic rock, whatever it might be. I had one other one I'm listening to quite a bit, but I can't think of it now off the top of my head. But yeah, Rapzilla. I came across that like a year ago.
Okay.
Chris Chicago is the radio host, and like I love it every week or every 2 weeks when they come out with their new Christian hip-hop artists that are out and about. It's fun. I think it's in recorded in Nashville, Tennessee.
Who are the big names right now?
Minio. I can't think of his first. Andy Minio. Yep. Andy Minio. Of course, Lecrae. He's always talked about, but Andy Minio. I would have to think of some others, but it's good stuff.
Cool.
I enjoy listening
That's
to
great.
It.
That's awesome.
Oh, and then if I listen to mainstream hip hop, one that I found that I actually like the way he just sounds is Russ. I don't know if you've heard of Russ at all. It can go from slow hip hop to upbeat, get you pumped up hip hop. And he was a SoundCloud artist. Excuse me. So he like distributed all on SoundCloud, and that's how he got found. And I think that's something that attracts me to it too, because it's the grind of someone trying to build it, and they document it through their audio. So that's cool.
True.
Gosh, Carpet Booth Studios. So people can go out there, obviously, to record high-quality music.
Yep.
They can go out there with their whole band, right? How many-piece band do you think?
There's really no limit. I mean, there obviously is a limit.
like, really?
But something as far as a realistic arrangement of an ensemble, like, we can accommodate most things with our new space. We weren't able to before. But some of the projects we have lined up, like I said, is maybe just a solo artist, and so we'll just be working a lot in one or two rooms together. But then I've got a few projects on the books that are like 6-piece bands, 5-piece bands. And the reason we built a new space like we build it is I am a lover of like old school recording techniques where everybody's in the same room and we're doing a lot at the same time, where a lot of modern records are done in pieces. So we'll do some pre-production and then we'll hit drums and we'll move on to bass and we'll move on to the next thing and finish with vocals. And then you move into the mixing process, which is a great way to do records. And I still do a lot of records that way. That's how we've always done them at the old space for the most part, because we didn't have a lot of space to accommodate everybody working at once. There's a really cool energy that you can get when a band can just make eye contact and play in the same room together. But with all the isolation rooms, we can stick loud things like amplifiers and different things like that so that we get clean captures of all the instruments but still get that in the same room vibe without bleed into the microphone. So,
audiobooks?
Yeah, we haven't done one probably for like 5 or 6 months, but we've done some short story stuff, like one novel, and those things are fine. Honestly, I like diversity, so it's still a really technical thing to make sure you get the best capture of whatever voice, so I'm picking the right microphone for the right voice and for the right delivery and performance, so I still enjoy the challenge.
Do you ever read them, or does someone usually come in and read it?
Oh, no, I don't. No, I'm not voice talent. Okay. No, I see what you mean, yeah.
So what about like voiceover work? Do you do any of that? Or
no.
That's all?
I bring in people. Okay. Yeah. I mean, a lot of the voiceover work stuff we do is the voice talent hiring us, and they already have a job, and we're just doing the technical engineering side of it. But once in a while, for whatever reason, like we've done some multimedia projects or something where it's an instrumental record, and then there's some some things read over it, some poetry or something like that, or little soliloquies basically or something. And so for those random times, I've brought in people from the area that their voice fits the vibe for whatever it is, whether they're professional voice talent or not. A lot of people can read something with some coaching on a microphone, so I like it. It's really fun to use the network of musicians and people with talent that I know around the area to bring in for different projects. I really love that.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
Johnny, any questions? What you got over there?
Yeah, I got a question. So you graduated 9 years ago, right?
Say it again.
Did you graduate 9 years ago in 2010, you said?
Oh, graduate. Yep, exactly. Yeah.
So right, you went to college, and I'm just wondering, after college, you said you started doing like portable recording, right? Like
So I worked at a church for 2 years straight after school, and then I was starting to kind of pick up my solo production stuff. Yep, portable
stuff. Did you ever have to work any like odd jobs to find money when you didn't have it, or?
Like I said, I've kind of been, I'm kind of stubborn when it comes to that. Yeah. I mean, in high school and college, I worked a ton of odd jobs, like waiting and working at coffee shops and working at Hollywood Video here in town. I worked at a hotel for many years. Okay. But once I got into, like once I graduated college, I saw a lot of people around me like pick up the random job for stability, which there's nothing wrong with that. But once you get a good paycheck, even if it's a job where you wouldn't expect to get a good paycheck, if you're working 40, 50 hours a week, you're going to get a good amount of money. And so it becomes real comfortable for a lot of people.
Right.
And I just kind of wanted to avoid that.
Yeah.
And even if it meant struggle and like frustration, I just didn't want to really risk that, which is probably good and bad. I think you could probably view it from both ways. But the way that my wife and I have always talked about like career stuff is we never want to get to like a midlife crisis and say like, what if we would have tried that? You know, if this is really my dream and there's practical ways to achieve it, you can't just shoot from the hip. If there's practical and realistic ways to achieve it, then I'm definitely in the age group where this is the time to take risks and fall forward fail forward if I do fail. So fingers crossed.
Love that.
Yeah.
That's good. That's a good perspective. I mean, it takes discipline to not take that, you know,
like I said, there's nothing wrong with it though.
No,
I
just right.
I think I would love the paycheck and I would love the stability. I would probably, and in the small town, even like college is a great example where, I mean, school is a massive commitment. It's like a full-time job in itself, but working a ton of hours on top of that and volunteering and stuff and being involved in music projects, I actually neglected a lot of my own songwriting because I was doing so much creative work in school. And I'm actually in that same problem right now, like we talked earlier, where I'm working on so many creative projects that it's realistic. I could prioritize it, to be honest. I could work at midnight, like you said, or work an extra day on a week to work on my own stuff, but when you're so
the eighth day of the week.
So I don't know, just trying to be realistic about managing my commitments and time, I guess. But
Julia says we did that on hold message together for the one client.
Oh man, yeah.
Wait, what?
I thought about that right after I said that. I was like, that's not true. I did do one voiceover thing and so did my wife Julia. Yeah, it was a healthcare company in town that needed a voicemail and call waiting done. And we really hadn't done a lot of those at that time. I had done a couple corporate projects like that, but I basically composed a simple piece according to the genre that they wanted it to be in. And then I tried to bring in voice talent, but it was a quick turnaround. So I ended up on just asking my wife to come and we both basically read off, this is blank business. Thank you for your patience as we pick up your call, basically. I'm not too proud of it, but you can't. I think it's still on our website.
Are you the guy on like AT&T where it's like, sorry, all lines are busy and we will get back to you shortly? Just stop it.
Basically, your call is important to us.
Said that exact thing. Yeah.
Your college buddy says, how did the name Carpet Booth come about?
Is it Sorum?
Yeah, Sorum.
I like how you said college buddy. Cause
I know, I was gonna say it wrong again. So
nobody gets it right the first time.
Sorab.
I think I'm still saying it wrong a little bit. Carpet Booth started when I was in late middle school, early high school. Me and my buddies loved writing songs together, and so we needed a spot to record. And my mom had a closet in the basement that we tried to use as a vocal booth, and so we grabbed like carpet scrap from some carpet store dumpster in town and just tacked it up with nails. Which she wasn't happy about when we sold the house, because there was like 1 million nail holes in that closet. It was worthless.
Yes.
We made like a dead vocal booth, and honestly, it didn't work that well. But we always said, like at school, like, oh, let's go to the carpet booth to record. And we always said that. And so when I, like I said, this all kind of happened by accident. It kind of snowballed, and it was just Zach Zern's random spot downtown, which I probably should have just kept as a name. And we needed a name, and so I basically panicked and was like, "What is?" I didn't want to pay homage to my origins, basically, and that's how we got it. I'm happy with it.
Oh, heck yeah!
No, it's a great name.
It's super quirky, yeah. And a lot of people are like, "It's called what?" I have to say it a few times, but
no, that's perfect.
We have name recognition now, so it's too.
And
late.
Now they're gonna be like showing up to your studio and be like, "I was expecting like some carpet booth in a basement, and like, what is this place?"
Well, the coolest thing about this is we ended up hiring a studio designer who lives in Minneapolis area, and he's worked on a ton of amazing studios in the Upper Midwest. And we were lucky enough to have him on board, and he designed the whole studio for us. And in some of our meetings, I shared the same story, and we both had the idea of, why don't we actually make one of these isolation booths a carpet booth? And so on the east side, our medium-sized ISO booth actually is covered on every single wall with carpet to sort of pay homage to our origins.
Yes.
And it does have a sound quality as well. It dampens the room a little bit, but it's really an aesthetic thing. So nice. That'll be cool.
All right, we made it. We made it. We made it.
Where are we at?
50 minutes, man. That's a great. 50. That was awesome. That was a blast.
Thanks for asking questions. Thanks for chatting.
Yeah, thank you for everybody that joined too, and keep the questions coming. Zach, if people want to follow you, not just Carpet Booth, but your personal music life, where can they find you as a musician? Where are you distributing music?
Yeah, so everything for Carpet Booth is at Carpet Booth or carpetbooth.com, and then everything me is at Zzurn or Zzurn.com. Zzurn.
Is that like, we didn't get into it, but is it hard rock or is it like, what do you produce?
It's like pop.
There you go.
Indie pop. Some electronic elements in there and stuff. I've played plenty of hard rock back in the day. I'm kind of overriding that. So yeah, pop is where my heart is. So that's kind of what the solo stuff is.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody, for joining.
Thank you.
Yes. And we'll catch you next time. And thank you to our sponsors for our Styrofoam cups from Snappy Land.
Thank you. There's a lot of viewers on there.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you guys.
That's good.
That was awesome.
That was awesome.